Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome back to the show. Keith Lusher here, and we're about to crank up the Sockeye segment of North Shore Fisher Report. Every year about this time we do it, and this is the month where we see the Sockeye reports coming in daily to North Shore Fisher Report. Up next is someone who is probably one of the best Sockeye fishing I've ever seen. I've been fishing with him numerous times and witnessed his innate ability to find these fish and catch them. Cajun Ray Miller, the Sockeye Killer, joins us.
Good morning.
All right, Ray. Ray, let's start out with what you're seeing out there. When's the last time you fished?
I fished yesterday. I'm not going to say nothing about my wife. Todd got in trouble, so I'm going to stay out of trouble.
You see me close that down pretty quick. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with that.
Last weekend, it was our 50th wedding anniversary, so got to keep that trend going.
So your wife's not big and mean, right?
Oh, no. I use a two-week rule. You never heard of that?
No, I have not heard of it.
If your wife had, well, Keith, listen, I'm a 70-year-old man. I'm gonna teach you a lesson. If your wife asks you to do something, you tell her, babe, I'll get to it in a couple of weeks. I'm really busy right now. Well, 2 weeks is gonna pass by and you hadn't done it yet. And she's gonna say, well, you forgot to do this. You say, oh, babe, I'm so sorry. I'll get to it in a couple of weeks. I promise. Well, next thing you know, it's 50 years have passed and you've done the 2 week rule. See. So
if I keep you talking about your wife, you're going to mess up sooner or later, right?
Sooner or later. But, we went fishing yesterday, and we had a really good morning. It started out slow. It was kind of chilly when we got out there. But we hit a couple of little honey holes, and, we didn't catch a lot of fish, at the end of the day, what we kept. But I told Neil, I said, look, before we turn into this dead-end canal, we're going to fish this little bank right here. And we only went about 20 feet, and I caught four bass right off the bat. We're looking for Sockeye, but we caught four bass. Then I made a turn, and I got into the canal, and I caught a few brim. So that's how our day started. And then we got into the back end of the canal, and I started catching a few Sockeye. And Neil says, you have any more of those black and orange jigs?
Black and orange.
That was what I was catching them on. Yes, it was a black and orange. I usually like to use a total black and gold.
Talk a little bit about the timing of the spawn because, man, it gets hot and heavy, but these fish, they move off those beds quickly, and before you know it, it's over. Talk a little bit about, the timing of this because it really doesn't last that long.
No, it doesn't last that long. People are under the assumption, they spawn the whole month of March and April. Well, they don't. They don't all do it at the same time, which is good for the fishermen because you're going to have some that are going to move up and they're going to move out. You might fish a bank today and catch 20 or 30 and go back and fish the same area tomorrow and not get a bite. Because what happens is the male goes and he fans this area where they're going to spawn. The female drops her eggs. And then the female is gone. She's not around anymore. She may go find another nesting area to, lay some more eggs because she's going to drop 100,000 eggs or better. Well, the male sits on that nest, and he protects these eggs for 3 to 5 days. The eggs start to hatch after 3 days. It all depends on water temperature, right? And then when those eggs start to hatch, he's gone. you know, so it's really quick. They move up in the shallows, they do their business, and they're out of there. So that's why, so sometimes it's such a hit and miss proposition when you're spawn fishing. And I tell people all the time, you need to check your spots often, as often as you possibly can go fishing, you know, because they will be up and down.
Yeah. And man, I'll tell you what, keeping records is vital right now as far as water temperature and when you start to see them move into the shallows. So that can tell you a lot.
It will tell you a lot. Now we had a, go ahead.
The water, you mentioned water temperatures, but how does the moon affect the spawn?
Well, the moon affects it a lot. That's kind of like mother's alarm clock for these fish. You know, the full moon is the 9th, so you have 3 or 4 days before and 3 or 4 days after, you know, the full moon that those fish are really, Mother Nature has cracked the whip, and they know they got to go. And the water temperature in the river yesterday was 61, 62 degrees. So all of the things are right. Now, I know they got people thinking right now, well, hell, this water's muddy in the river. Well, let me tell you, I caught some fish yesterday. Adam caught fish. Jig Rig caught fish. You know, Jig Rig was fishing in the river. He wore out a battery yesterday trying to stay on these fish. And wow. But he was catching them, but where he was catching them, I'm not going to tell him exactly where he was catching, but he had to move around a lot, but he wore out a battery. Because he was fighting the current and the wind so much. I just decided to stay in the canals. I wasn't going to fight all that. So,
yeah.
But we all caught some nice fish yesterday. Even, man, we had a lot of people out there. Even the Yankee was out there yesterday. So, and Neil felt good enough to come out with us. So we had a lot of people on the river. They didn't have it. I put them on my report. Fish didn't have a chance yesterday.
Oh, Jake McCutcheon was out there, huh? He was bass fishing or sockeye fishing?
No, he was bass fishing. But let me tell you what he did. He sent me a picture. He said, look what I got. He had a 30-some-odd pound garfish that he caught.
Oh, wow. I was just talking with Andy about these garfish when it gets cold. Seems like you don't see them anymore.
No, you don't see them much, but they're still lurking around. They'll stay deep, but they won't be rolling as much. But I was telling him, I said, did you keep it? He said, no. I said, why you didn't keep it? He said, well, are they good to eat? I said, oh, my gosh. And he caught a long-nosed garfish. Those are the best ones to eat. 30-pounder? Man, that's some good stuff there. So, yeah, we had a lot. Not just us, but there was a lot of people out there yesterday.
So, you say the garfish, that varies from alligator gar to the thin-nosed garfish? That tastes better than the alligator gar?
Yes, it does. They're both good, but that's the best tasting ones. I don't
know
why. I guess maybe I don't know, but I've eaten them both, and those have a better flavor. All you got to do is the way you clean them. You know, it's not that difficult. But when you clean them, you make sure there's no red meat or dark meat on there at all, and you end up with a really pretty white meat, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good meat. I know why they break it down, though, and they make those gar balls, and they put them in the blender. That texture is awfully weird. It's kind of like a cotton when you bite into it. So
it's a different texture. So.
Yeah. Sockeye, any new baits out on the market you want to try? We did a little show for Sock Week that's coming up in a few days. There were some new baits that you've never tried. Anything that catch your attention?
What's the one that had the one with the little round tail on the end that's like our speckled trout bait? I'm definitely going to try some of those.
Scissor tail. Yeah.
Well, the scissor tail, that's the one with the head that looks like a tadpole.
Yeah, and that was the one with the pads on the back.
Yeah, with the pads on. I'm talking about that single one with the pad on the back that looks like a speckled trout bait, you know, with the round.
Oh, you're talking
like
about
the tail.
Crappie slider.
Yeah. We'll try that, sure. That other one, I'll get a couple of packs and give him the jig rig, let him work on it, because that's his style of fishing right there.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
yeah.
I want to try those, because they're really a good-looking bait. You know?
Yeah. I want to thank him. He sent in some jigs, some Slater jigs. You heard of the Slater jigs, huh?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I have some in my box. Shoepick fishes with he fishes a lot with Slater jigs.
Yeah,
in fact, exclusively with Slater jigs. I tried
Martin Duvick.
Send him some of mine. He said I'm good.
Well, he sent some in to give away for Sock Week next week.
Yes.
So I want to thank him. All right, Ray, stick around. You're going to stick around with us? If you could stay on the line with me into the next hour, we're going to take it all the way to 9 o'clock talking about Soccer. We're going to have a bunch of guests on. Mr. Green's going to be on, Zach Liberto, and Jeremy Glasscock's going to join us as well. So I'd like you to stick around with me. One more thing, those green worms, what is that? Is that organic or is that dyed?
Well, there's a powder that you can buy. It's called Worm Glow. And I take a box of worms and I put a tablespoon of this. The powder is actually orange when you put it in there, and it's worm food. And then you seal it, shake it up a little bit, put it in an ice box, and 4 days later, your worms turn chartreuse green. And man, let me tell you, you pinch an inch, you put it on a number six cricket hook, and look, when that worm hits the water, there's just a big old circle of bright chartreuse juice that comes out of these worms. And the lake runners go nuts over this. So trust me, I bet you I can catch five to your one if I'm using green worms and you're using regular. Love it that much.
Okay. So what's the name of that stuff? You know the name?
Yeah, Worm Glow. Worm Glow.
All right. Worm Glow. Pick me up some Worm Glow.
I buy a big container of it on Amazon.
All right. So stick around, Ray. Ray, you're going to join us, and Mr. Green's going to be coming up.
We're going to talk.
Yep, we're going to be talking about Bayou Lacombe Soccer Fishing with Mr. Green coming up right after the break. It's the North Shore Fishing Report. It's the Soccer Edition. Stick around. Okay, welcome back to the show. We're talking Soccer this morning, and we're going to switch over from the Chafunta River, and we're going to talk a little bit about Bayou Lacombe. Lacombe native Forrest Green joins us this morning. Mr. Green's been fishing Bayou Lacombe all his life and knows a thing or two about catching those soccer. Good morning, Mr. Green.
Well, good morning, team. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good, and I'm joined by Ray Miller here this morning.
Morning,
Green. Doing any fishing this weekend?
Yeah, well, no, I didn't go the weekend, but I went this week and beat them up pretty good.
Beat them up, huh? Punch them in the mouth?
Yeah, I caught 30 yesterday, 30 another day, 25 another day, and they all in the day it ends, and I just had a wonderful week with them. I'm talking about a wonderful week.
I guess so, 20, 30, that's pretty good. How far up are they as far as the shallows?
They're way back in the back of all the canal. That's where I find most of these, in the back dead end, in about 18 maybe to 30 inches of water. That's it. And I mean, they back in there. A ton of males. A few females, so that means they're building these beds. They're probably Lacombe about to get on fire in the next, say, 10 days.
They're right on schedule.
Mr. Green, talk a little bit about. Yep.
Huh?
Talk a little bit.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about. All right. Can you hear me?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about Bayou Lacombe before Katrina and what happened to it after Katrina, because it's really like night and day when you're comparing the soccer population before and after, isn't it?
Yeah, well, what happened with Katrina, now the soccer, you know, a scientific part of it, I don't know, but the bass and the brim, all those fish came back a whole lot earlier. And in the last 4 or 5 years, the soccer showed back up. I mean, they had areas where I was catching them before Katrina, and those areas, I can't catch them there, and I couldn't catch them nowhere else. But in the last 4 or 5 years, the soccer had just been phenomenal around here. So, I don't know if the storm just really damaging them. I really don't know. I stayed on top of them, but now they are here back. They're back. I'm talking about back everywhere. You can go north and catch them on the tree. You can go in the dead ends in Bayou Lacombe. You can go to the truss and catch them in Bayou Lacombe. And I've been like, you know, I'm a good fisherman. I understand fishing. I'm an outdoor guy. I don't know what happened to them during Katrina, but it took them a long time to come back.
Ray, you seeing the same thing on Bayou Lacombe?
Oh, yeah. It took me – we used to catch a lot of soccer before Katrina and after Katrina. Actually, it took me almost 3.5-4 years before I actually caught a soccer after Katrina. And I used to, half of my creel, when I'd go catch brim and bass and sockeye, half of my box was sockeye. You know, so it's been a, but man, I'm glad they're coming back, though.
They're back. They're back. I mean, you can catch them on jigs. The jigs, Spectrum that we're making, I'm doing a lot with them. I'm having my seminar every Thursday. I got about 8 or 9 people become a class with me, and I've been sending them out. A guy yesterday went out. I told him where to go. He wound up with 15 yesterday, and we only got one guy left that haven't caught any. And I told him, don't let me test people up just yet. Please don't let me test people up. So I'm headed to Shadow Lake tomorrow. I told him he got to have me 5 sockeye when I get back. He's the only guy I haven't caught, but everybody else is doing wonderful with him.
Spectrum baits, yeah. What's the popular choice for the Spectrum baits as far as the sockeye style goes? What color?
John from Madisonville came down, and he done well with pineapple, which is a chartreuse bait that we make, and he done well with it. I done very well with the blue one. Carl been throwing the black with chartreuse dotted on the tail. So most of the baits are very good. They're very good. They've been doing well. And here they've been doing excellent. Cattle leg, they've done well. And all the guys in the class I got, I call them my class, but they come every Thursday and sit down and talk to them. And they've been doing very well with them. So the sockeye are biting by you, Lacombe.
Yeah, where are you holding your seminar at?
At Bayou Lacombe, Bayou Venture, and Bayou Lacombe. At Bayou Venture every Thursday night at 5 o'clock, from 5 to 6:30. Sometimes it go long, and sometimes it don't. But that's where I've been holding at Bayou Venture and Bayou Lacombe. And you can find
Mr.
the beer at Bayou Venture.
Yeah, Mr. Green, we're looking at some news from the spillway. It looks so far like they might not open that thing. Man, that's going to bode well for the trout and the redfish this spring, and even into the summer and fall. What's your thoughts on that, man? If we can get this spillway to stay closed one season, huh?
I'm headed to Texas tomorrow, and I need to hurry up and get that finished up. I told the guy that we're making the bait. I said, guess what? I don't think they're going to open the spillway. I just can't wait to get to the trestle and all these rigs. I just can't wait. I can't wait. I know they're coming. They was here during the fall of the year on the trestle, and they was in Bayou Lacombe on the show line. I'm talking about good 14, 16-inch speckled trout. So that went on through the fall of the year, and I'm pretty sure it's going to come right back in the spring of the year. I can't wait. I haven't caught a good speckled trout in the spring in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's been a rough spring for the past 2 years. I was talking with Captain Andy Jones about those reefs, man, and the wells out there, they just don't produce anymore, and I guess that's due to the salinity. But hopefully this spring, if this thing doesn't open, we can get back to normal as far as catching those trout off the artificial reefs, huh?
Oh yeah, I got my fingers crossed, I got my leg crossed, and I got a couple buddies of mine. We're just sitting around waiting, and he said, "Well, Mr. Green, I'm gonna have to sell my boat." I said, "Don't sell it this spring. This spring gonna be good." Yeah, and I know it's going to be good. I just know it. I'm all excited about it. I can't wait.
Yep.
I'm going to catch those big bass up there this week. I'm going to be back and get all the Spectrum bait ready. And I just can't wait to get to the Trussell Nose Reef out here.
Yep. Forrest, switching back over to sockeye, what would you recommend? I don't think anybody – well, you might be able to get out today with these winds and these dead-end canals. They're kind of protected, but – what advice would you give for fishing Bayou Lacombe this weekend?
Or if sockeye? I was going to Bayou Lacombe this weekend, I would fish most of the dead ends and catch the canals that don't have a whole lot of wind in it, and just drift down the bank slow and find a limb or two in the water and throw it about 20 inches under a caulk, because that's what I've been catching them, under a caulk, and just throw it up against the bank. But if you got the smaller canals, get more to one side of the bank and cast it to the bank and work the bait back. Because some of the sockeye will get down in 3 feet of water, and you don't want to miss those by being too close to the bank. So I would fish the dead ends without all the wind, and I would work the main canal also. They are in the main canal, especially the ones that only got 3 feet of water. Those are canals they're really in, the dead ends. They're really in those.
Mr. Green, bass fishing. What's the biggest you caught? Is big bass showing up yet?
No, we haven't caught any. The Soccerlay been doing so well. I've been torn between the Soccerlay and the bass, but the Soccerlay been doing so well. But the bass going to get started probably late March. So I kind of like leaving them alone for a minute, because if you got the iron hot, then beat on why it's hot. And the Soccerlay is hot right now, and I'm beating on them right now.
One track mind.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, yeah, because you can't do both. You can't go bass fishing in the day and then turn around and want to fish Soccerlay in the day. So you can't study both of them at the same time. So I tell the guys in my seminar, hey, if you're going to go Soccerlay fishing, focus on Soccerlay and do the best you can with it, and then understand what you did that day, and you'll be all right. You can't do both. Can't straddle the fence. But I will get on those bass. I'll get on when I come back.
Yeah, I'm going to tell the bass that you're giving them a break. They're going to be all over the place. All right.
The Soccerlay is talking to them right now and asking them, y'all need to start biting, get Mr. Green off our back. But we have done very well here, Keith, on the Soccerlay. This has been a great year. You know, a great year. When you can catch that many males in the back, I mean, they're building their beds back there. The females would be there. Matter of fact, I almost don't want to go to Texas right now, because I'm going
to
miss
it. I was about to say, it sounds like you're about to put down the phone and head off to Bayou Cove and do some fishing.
Yeah, it's just been that great. I'm not kidding. Just, you know, get you some jigs or get you some minnows. I know we're making jigs and would like for people to support us on all that, but just to go out and enjoy the day to catch Soccerlay and Bayou Cove, get you some jigs, get you some minnows. It's all good. Either way you look at it, go enjoy the day.
All right. Good advice from Mr. Green. Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Green, and be safe going to Texas. And hurry up, get back, and wear out these fish.
All right.
See you soon,
thanks
Green.
For having me, and hope everybody enjoy Bayou Lacombe Soccerlay and go to Bayou Venture and find some of those spectrum crappie baits, and y'all will enjoy them. I promise you, you will. You won't be surprised.
All right. Got a promise there from Mr. Green. All right, Mr. Green, catching
Thank
those
you.
Soccerlay. On Bayou Lacombe, the resurgent Bayou Lacombe. Great to see that area coming back. I've been monitoring the reports out of Lacombe, and for the past 3 years, it's progressively gotten better. So I'm looking forward to it being the best spring we've seen in over a decade on Bayou Lacombe. Okay, we talked to Mr. Green, a lifelong Soccerlay angler. Up next, we're going to talk to someone who's relatively new to the game. We have Zach Liberto coming up. Zach is a big speckled trout and red fisherman, but luckily I see he's caught the Soccerlay bug. The Soccerlay bug has struck Zach. He's tight lining the rivers for those slabs, so we're going to find out what happened and get some tips from Zach as well. Stick around on the North Shore Fish Report. We're talking Soccerlay this morning. And welcome back to the North Shore Fishing Report. This hour it's all about Soccerlay, how to catch them, what baits to use, where to find them. Ray Miller joins me right now. Ray, we have Zach Liberto is scheduled to join us. We're having trouble connecting with him, but he's got an interesting story. You know Zach. He's been on with North Shore Fisher Report for a while.
I talked to him a couple of years. Never met him, but we've talked several times.
Yeah, speckled trout fisherman. He fishes speckled trout, redfish. And, man, he made that jump, I think it was last year, into the Soccerlay world. Man, he put a hurting on them. It sounds like he's definitely hooked. So whenever he can connect with us, if you listen to Zach, call in, and I'd like to talk to you. But
he is hooked a lot, because we talked several times, and he was asking for advice and telling me where he found some places. There's one spot, a friend of mine, I told him, I said, you need to get those fish in there, because if you don't, Zach will.
Boy, that's all that your Chifunctin needs is another Soccerlay angler. We talk about the Chifunctin a lot, Ray, but what areas do you fish as well? Do you venture off into that Tickfaw River?
Yeah, I fished Tickfaw. In fact, I'm trying to make a trip with Jeremy this week sometime to go and run, because they're starting to have some – the water's really muddy in the Tickfaw right now, but that's okay. They still got to eat. And but we do that, and also Bayou Lacombe and Cane Bayou. you know. So those are the places that I typically will fish, other than the Trefuncta. The Trefuncta is so close to my house, you know, so it's just my first choice. And I used to fish a lot in Bidico, you know, because that's 15 minutes I'm fishing in Bidico. But it's during the springtime, it's really hard to fish in there because there's so much boat traffic. And then during hunting season, you just stay out of there because it's too dangerous. It's like a really winding bayou. And I think once some of these guys put in at the boat launch, they try to see how fast they can run the gauntlet. So, but that weekday, you go on a weekday, you know, on weekends, there's so many people that live on that river back there, you know, so I kind of avoid it. But I will fish there a couple of times during the spawn, and because I've caught a lot of really nice sockeye and the goggle-eye in there. There's tons of them. So that's the main thing we catch over there. Use my green worms.
What about White Kitchen? You venture over to White Kitchen? I got some good reports coming out of there. It looks like Chad Champagne did good over in White Kitchen, huh?
Well, actually, I went to White Kitchen last week. And we got in there, and I fished there really hard for 3 hours. I didn't get a bump. Some friends of ours went the week before the cold front, and they caught some huge sockeye. They caught 25, I believe it was. But anyway, so I went way in the back of White Kitchen where I normally find the spawning fish. And when I got back there, I looked down and I told my buddy, I threw my cark in there, and all of a sudden it's passing by the boat. I said, man, we got a problem here. There's not supposed to be a current in here because it's a landlocked lake. And the Pearl River was starting to flow in there. So you had, and the lake was muddy. The water's typically beautiful, clear. And so with that running, all that new fresh water coming in there, those fish just turned off. Now, the Pearl River's down again, so that White Kitchen should come back again. On the weekends, there'll be so many people out there when they find out that the sockeye are running in there. But I usually make at least two, sometimes three trips there a year. And after the sockeye spawn, brother-in-law and I like to go in there with the green worms, and we catch some monster brim and goggle-eye. I'm talking big ones, hand stretch your hand kind of brim and goggle-eye.
Yeah. Ray, for those that don't know, where exactly is White Kitchen when you hear White Kitchen mentioned?
It's called, actually, if you look on the map, you can Google White Kitchen, or you can do they call it a wayside park. And it's if you take Fremont South and it comes to an intersection where Highway 90 hits it, it's right there, right on that intersection. There used to be a restaurant there called the White Kitchen somewhere in that area. And a little history buff, that's where Jane Mansfield had her last meal before she had her accident down the road there. So that's how
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a little trivia. But it's called a Wayside Park, and it's really easy to find. The launch is a cowboy boat launch, which just means that it's a gravel launch, and it's a good launch. And I've seen several big bass boats put in there, but I gotta warn them: do not run in this lake idle wherever you go. If you hit 5 foot of water, that's deep. Six foot is just astronomical. So. But 5-6 foot is the best. You know, you're going to get most of the lake is 4 foot deep. It's something that was formed after Katrina, but there's so many lilies. And during the summertime, you can sit there and just if you close your eyes, it is so noisy with the birds and the alligators. You know, they're everywhere. You know, so if you're an outdoorsman and you want to listen to all the sounds, just go out there. Now, there's no shade. So if you have a breeze, we canceled one day because it was supposed to have 15 to 20 mile an hour winds. That's White Cap Center. You get any kind of a breeze out there, you're not going to be able to fish. So it's an awesome place. It really is.
Like a mini Lake Pontchartrain.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, you mentioned Jeremy Glass. You mentioned Jeremy Glasscock, and he fishes the Tickfall River, and he's coming up on the next segment. Want to thank him. He's donated a Sam Heaton super sensitive jig pole to the raffle that we're doing for Sock Week next week on NorthShoreFishingReport.com.
That's pretty awesome.
You ever fish with one of those, Sam Heaton?
How about I got two of them? I got a 10-footer and 11-footer.
Question.
Actually, I caught some nice soccer with that 11-footer yesterday. It's a really good rod, very sensitive, and it does have some backbone in case you catch one of them, you know, 12, 13, 14-inch soccer. And, man, a couple of the soccer we caught yesterday, we caught some blacks, and they were so thick and so heavy. Oh, my gosh. And I put most of them in the boat, but I missed a couple of giants. Like an idiot, I left my dip net on the floor of the boat, you know, and should have grabbed it. But that's awesome place.
Talk a little bit about the black sockeye as far as black and whites are concerned. What's the difference?
Well, if you look at a black sockeye, it has black spots all over it, random.
Right.
But a white sockeye, if you look on the side, you'll see some definite up and down lines. So that's and it's a longer fish. Black sockeye is going to be short and chunky. A white sockeye is going to be long and slender with those white lines on the side. That's the most defining marks on them. The blacks have a tendency to stay more in the shallow water around brush piles and all that stuff. And the whites are going to be typically in deeper water chasing shad. I mean, they'll eat everything, but that's mainly their food is. And the same with the blacks, you know, they're a fish of opportunity. And I've told you many times, they're nothing but eating machines. They don't have a long life expectancy, you know, 5 to 7 years at best, you know, and all they do is they eat a lot and make babies, and they make a lot of babies. So,
yeah.
They're
about to be doing that soon.
Yeah, they're fixing to do that, you know, but because that female's going to drop over 100,000 eggs. You know, so I'm sure there's a lot of predators that are going to eat that. But after she drops her egg, she's gone, and the male takes over for three, four, five days. Their eggs are hatching after that, and then he's gone. You know, so a lot of people see all of these fishermen catching sockeye and they think, man, y'all going to wear out the population. Well, no, Mother Nature works in strange ways, and she's going to they're very, very prolific, and they're going to repopulate a lot. That's why you don't put them in a private pond, because they'll overpopulate the pond. They'll take over.
Really?
Yes.
Ray,
they have a pond up there they have a farm, and they have about a 2-acre pond up there. And the state went in there to put some some brim and some bass. And he said, "Well, I want sockeye too." And he said, "No, we won't do that." He said, "You're gonna kill your lake if you do that."
Wow.
In that answer?
So it'll only be sockeye then, huh?
Yeah, eventually, yeah.
Well, to some people, that doesn't sound like such a bad thing.
No, it's not such a bad idea, you know, so.
Yeah.
But Jeremy's coming on in a little bit.
Yeah, Jeremy, Pastor Jeremy Glasscock's going to be joining us in a little bit. We're going to get to the break right here, but Ray, stick around with me, and maybe you and Jeremy can put together a trip. So we'll check in with him. See how that spawn's going on in that Tickfall River. Stick around for more North Shore Fishing Report on More Outdoors. And welcome back to the show, the North Shore Fishing Report. As we continue our sockeye hour this morning, we're going to check in with somebody who fishes the Tickfall River often, year-round, actually, for sockeye, Mr. Jeremy Glasscock. Good morning, Jeremy.
Hey, Keith. How are you, man?
Doing pretty good. I got Ray here with me.
Hey, Jeremy. How you doing, bud? Hey there.
I'm doing Man, doing good. Today ain't going to be a good day. I'm honeydewing all day. But the plus side is,
You see, Keith, he missed the 2-week rule.
Yeah. Ray, inform Jeremy about the 2-week rule.
Jeremy, you got to tell your wife, babe, I'm really sorry I can't do it today, but I'll get to it in a couple of weeks. And then next time you don't do it, she's going to say something. You're going to say, babe, I'm really sorry. Been so busy, but I'll get to it in a couple of weeks. And next thing you know, you're going to have been married 30, 40, 50 years, and you still didn't do it.
I'm afraid after the first time I tell her in a couple of weeks, she's going to sell my boat.
I'll show him.
Oh, she's tough. She's tough.
Yeah, boy.
All right, Jeremy, give me a report on what you're seeing on your area.
Nah, it's pretty bad, man. The fish is kind of in a since January, man, I really thought the fish were gonna spawn in February this year, and the weather we were having, and you know, some friends of mine were catching some fish early that were egged up, and I'm not talking about just eggs. I mean eggs, belly swole, bloodlines in the eggs. They fix and lay them, and I really don't know what. I mean, the water temp fell and the fish didn't spawn. I think a few did, but it's bad, man. It's bad. The river's been muddy, but muddy water don't really bother me. I kind of like fishing muddy water actually, but. The fish will move up and the water will get good, the moon will get right, and then we have these cold fronts and it drops the water 8 or 10 degrees, you know, and the fish stays
and goes all the water out.
Yeah, it's weird, man. And I caught some fish last week that were staging up, and I got really excited and watched the weather again because I thought they were going to do it on this moon. And then, you know, the water temp dropped to about 8 degrees. So I don't know. We'll see. I caught a bunch of males last time I went, and they were all ganged up staging in the mouth of a canal. So we'll see.
Jeremy, we look like we got some next week's shaping up. It looks like those water temperatures might be what's needed. What are you looking for as far as water temperatures over there?
I like it to be, you know, mid-60s, you know, 62 to 68 degrees, and it gets nasty, you know. And people think the spawn lasts 2-3 weeks, and my opinion, it's 2 or 3 days, you know, when you can really pull up there and catch those females. It might be on a Tuesday or a Thursday. It just depends on when that water hits the right temp. And here's the thing, man. You may catch fish in a canal in the south end of the river today because the water heated up faster. And tomorrow, those fish be done. Them sows are going to move up. They'll move up early that morning, and they'll lay their eggs. And the next day, they're gone, maybe. And then you may be able to move up the river as the water temp comes up, and you may catch fish for 4 or 5 days. But you know, a lot of times people catch the buck when they catch in Sacalay spawning. They stay there longer, right? The females don't stay long. But when that water gets 64, you know, 62, 3, 4 degrees, it gets interesting for about a week.
Ray, that temperature jives with what you're thinking too?
That's exactly right, you know, because when Mother Nature – you know, it's really strange that moon's up and the temperature's right. It's let's go, full out, and then it's done.
Jeremy, what are you targeting these fish when they actually do get into the shallows? Corks and jigs?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I use corks and jigs, and it's really funny, man. I mean, you know, people do a lot of different things. I know Mr. Ray fishes hair jig, something I've never fished with. I just use plastic tube jigs, man. And usually, it doesn't matter if the water's really muddy, the water's clear. The two main staples that people use copper fishing is black and chartreuse and blue and white. And in the spawn, you can catch them. I mean, there's baits you can go to catch more. And there's baits you're going to throw, you're going to catch less. You know, you can get to a crawfish color in water, and they will just, you know, it just depends, right? But I use a lot of tube jigs, man.
Jeremy, tube you jigs. Use an 1/8-ounce jig under a cork as well? Or you use a smaller jig?
If I'm fishing way back in it, there's some canals I like to fish, and there's a lot of trees in them, and the fish actually don't get on the first row of trees. That's where they stage. They spawn in about the third row of trees way in the back.
Yeah.
I'll use a 1/8-ounce jig when I'm pitching and shooting way in the back of those trees. It's just easier. I use a 1/16-ounce more in the spawn than I do any other time.
Yeah, that's why I was curious, because I know you like that 1/8 a lot.
I do. And a lot
of
you
like
to
fish deep water like I do, so that's, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah. People think I'm crazy with that eighth ounce Mr. Ray, but I love it. It does.
Jeremy, talk a little bit about your technique. Ray says you got this shake when you're not fishing with a cork, your tight line is straight down and you kind of make it tremble. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, I was watching Kevin Rogers about 3 or 4 years ago, and I mean, if anybody sackleg fishes and watches the Crappie Masters or anything, Kevin Rogers is one of the most prolific one pool guys in the world. I mean, he's unbelievable at it. And you know, he did a video 3 or 4 years ago about one pole jigging, and you know, you'll watch a lot of people when you take them, and they'll bounce that rod 4 or 5 inches, right? And if you watch a minnow in the water, a minnow's not jumping up and down 4 or 5 inches. Right? He's either sitting there just swimming along, or if he's dying, he's on his side and he'll flutter a little bit. Well, when you move your rod 4 or 5 inches, that bait, you're pulling it out of the strike zone, right? If you just tick your rod, I mean, just barely tick it. I mean, you can barely see the end of your rod moving. It's almost just a little small shake in your hand, or I'll tap it with my finger sometimes. And that jig will just shake. It'll vibrate. You know, if I'm moving a jig, that's the way I'm moving it, because I get way more bites doing that than I do bouncing it real aggressive, you know. But I don't know, it's kind of neat. We'll have to go and I'll show you one day.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, sometimes I'm fishing with Ray, I'm looking at my hand, almost your hand naturally shakes a little bit. I'm thinking if you just hold that jig stationary, it's actually going to have a little bit of movement just by your normal handshake. And, you know, like you said, a little tap, man, just to give it that little jerk. That looks awfully enticing for a sockeye, you got to think. I mean, you think you're not jigging it, so it's just holding steady. But I think your natural and the wind hitting your line, you know. So I think just holding that jig out there, presenting it in the right spot, it's going to have some kind of movement just due to your hand and your wind, you know?
Well, people call it dead sticking, right? You dead stick a jig. Well, if you have a good rod, right, and I'm a huge proponent of good rods, people say, well, go buy you a $20 sackleg fishing pole. Don't do that, right? Wait another year if you can't spend $50, and just wait and buy you a really good rod, because I've brought people and they bring rods and you're catching fish and you're watching them get bites on their line and they don't know how to watch their line and they never feel the fish, right? And I catch a lot of fish by just feeling a little bit of the weight come off that jig. That fish, if you fish in the spawn and it's called floating the cork, a fish will come up and hit it, okay? And they'll just float your cork. Your cork will float up sideways. Well, that fish came up and ate that bait, and if you're not watching, and the same thing when you're one pole jigging the deep, that fish will just come up and lift that jig and take the weight off your rod. And if you don't have a really good rod where you can feel everything, you know, you miss so many bites that you don't even know you've got.
Yeah, I've witnessed that when you're fishing with a cork, and just that difference in the way the cork floats, as far as those sockeye coming up. Now, Ray, John Gilead's got a theory of you catch those sockeye and their eyes are looking up when you catch them. That means they're coming up from underneath and working their way up to hit that lure. You think that's true?
Yes, I do. Sockeye typically hit up. You know, so a lot of times what Jeremy was saying, when they float your cork, mm-hmm. You know, it's another definition of that. You're fishing too deep.
Yep. Well, Jeremy, I want to thank you. Thank you for coming on, Jeremy. And look, thank you for that donation. We're going to be doing Sock Week next week on NorthShoreFishingReport.com. You donated that Sam Heaton super sensitive jig pole. Somebody's going to get that. A reporter. We're going to raffle them off to all those that report on sockeye on the website. And hopefully I can get you over here into the studio and get an interview from you.
I hope I win it.
Hey, I got
good. Oh, we got
on
some
that.
Good stuff. We got some good stuff to raffle away. Thanks a lot for joining us, Jeremy.
Mr. Ray, get with me. I won't go this week.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Keys. Y'all be blessed, man.
Thanks, Jeremy. All right. Well, that's it, Ray. What a great hour. What a fun hour talking with all our guests.
Yes, it was.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for donating those Soccer Ray jigs, you call them, so we can give away next week on North Shore. All right. We run out of time. I hear the music.
Okay.
Right. Let's do it. All right, Sokolay, big time. That's going to do it for the Sokolay Hour for North Shore Fishing Report. Man, they're about to bust loose, as Mr. Forrest Green says. I want to thank all my guests this morning, Captain Andy Jones of Wicked Charters, Chris Basie, Todd Ullman, Forrest Green, and thanks so much for joining. Sticking with me, Ray, talking Sokolay. It's been fun. Looks like it's going to be a great week of fishing next week, so go get you some soccer.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.